Good morning. Beautiful morning. We have these beautiful flowers on the altar. And it's spring. So it'll be cold, and then it'll be warm, and then it'll be cold. Many people have celebrated Passover in the last week or so. Celebration of liberation, of freedom. Today, many people are celebrating Easter, another celebration of freedom, at least as it's been interpreted. And I think those of us who are here today also see our practice as a practice of freedom. The way, as Dogen Zenji said, is never separated from where you are right now. Now, I know that our official Ango period, study period, is over, but I still want to linger a little bit with the Platform Sutra. And if you haven't had an opportunity to listen to the talks, there have been quite a few talks on the Platform Sutra over the last 90 days. And I just want to suck a little more juice out of this sutra before I let it down. Last week, you know, I talked about how we manifest our Buddha nature and how easy it is to get tricked by the mainstream, by the values of the societies we live in, the popular opinions of what is success. How many friends do you have? Depends on which Facebook version you're on, or how many people look at your website. What is success? What is good? What is right? And who determines that for you? Who determines that for you? You know, I think every single one of us is, within us, is an artist. Every single one of us has an artist inside us. One who is perfectly capable of discerning what we are uniquely able to do in this world. We're uniquely suited to do in this world, to offer the world. Some are rewarded for this quality more than others by being able to make it their profession, being able to make a living with it, or be recognized, or receive gratitude. And that can get our attention. That fame and that money and that gratitude, that can get our attention and can divert us from the very authentic nature that we have, what we are able to do that serves us and the world. It diverts us from our inner direction of our real destiny as artists of our lives. I'm not saying that we should ignore the social norms of where we live and when we live, but we don't have to be a slave to them. And our practice is to find the middle way, a balance that honors and appreciates the world as it presents itself to us, and at the same time, honoring and appreciating our own unique gift what we truly have to offer the world, to really appreciate that, even though it may never be rewarded with a cent or a single thank you or a single notice that you're great. You know, it's wonderful every once in a while a historian comes up with a set of letters that someone has written, some unknown person, and they edit them and they put them out, and you say, my gosh, this is the most brilliant writing of the 19th century. Where are our values that we think it's not valuable because we didn't hear about it? This person didn't run in the right circles. So I think that the reason we practice very much is to uncover the truth within us. That truth which may have been silenced. Maybe we lacked a little courage. That truth that shows us that from which we experience our interconnection with everything, our Buddha nature. So there's the whole world and there's us, and it's a dance. It's a dance because those are not two separate things. It's an intertwining, a balance, and finding a middle way. In section 40 of the Platform Sutra, in Yampolsky's version, something very pivotal occurs in a seemingly ordinary encounter, and I wanted to share it with you. There's a monk present in the group, so that, you know, although they say there are hundreds of people, actually it's probably a group about this size that he was speaking with. And a monk is present who, when he hears Wei Nang's sermon, he wakes up. You know how that is? I mean, it doesn't have to be a sermon. It can be when the cloud covers the moon and you wake up. Or you step off the curb and you wake up. Or you're washing a dish and the water's warm and you wake up. I think that you've already experienced these things, but you may not remember it, or you may have pushed it aside. Yeah. So this is what happened to this monk. He had a realization. He truly heard what Wei Ning was saying about the emptiness of all conditions, about the formlessness of everything. And he saw that. So he stands up and he says to the ancestor that he has been awakened and he's been sent by his teacher to listen to him, his teacher Shen Shu. Some of you who are studying the platform closely know that that is supposed to be his rival, Wei Ning's rival. And that Shen Shu sent this monk there in order to hear what the teaching is, and he is supposed to report back. The sixth ancestor says to him, well, if you come from that place, you're probably a spy. If you come from over there, you're probably a spy. Che Cheng, this monk, says, no, I'm not a spy. And the master says, why not? Che Cheng says, when as yet you hadn't preached your sermon to me, I was a spy. But now that you have preached, I am not. And the sixth patriarch says, the very passions or enlightenment is also like this. It's a quote. The very passions or enlightenment is also like this. So, Che Ching was a spy, an informer, someone seeking information that might be useful to an enemy. You might even be threatening to the one spied on. A spy kind of implies someone who is duplicitous, right? Presents oneself, but that's not the real one. Presents one desire to, I want to learn from you, but the real one is I want to take this information and give it back to my teacher. So his appearances are one way and his loyalties in a different direction. A spy is on one side looking at the other side in order to gain something. So you could say in a way that all of us are kind of like, when we're searching for the way, we're like spies looking over to the other side. But when he heard the sermon, Cheqing says, I'm no longer a spy. You could say he's a convert. He's recognized the truth of awakening. He's not seeking information about awakening. He is awakening. It's very powerful. Have you ever felt that way, I wonder? Maybe being very attached to one point of view, seeing yourself in a particular kind of way that perhaps you've been encouraged to see yourself in. You know, by your conditioning, at your school, at home, by your partner, a certain way that you're supposed to be. And then, all of a sudden, there's a shift. And that's not the way you actually see it yourself at all. Has that ever happened to you? The very passions or enlightenment is also like this, Weining says. What does he mean by that? The very passions are enlightenment. Is that paradoxical? Are passions bad, enlightenment good? It's a fundamental Mahayana teaching that is so often misinterpreted, very much from those who come from the Abrahamic traditions, where we feel that we have to deny our passions, that they always lead down an evil pathway. Passions, are the translation, the word in the sutra is kleshas, or it's a Chinese transliteration of kleshas. And we often translate it as afflictions. So there are these, what are they? There are feelings. There are emotions, our drives. You can't pull those away from us. Is this what we want to suppress? Are they fixed entities that we want to push down, suppress, cut away? Or are they empty? Lacking any solidity, coming and going. Aren't they constantly shifting energies, these passions? Empty of any fixed state? Flowing, momentary? Where was that anger I had yesterday? Try to gin your anger up again. You know, the Diamond Sutra, which is kind of the subtext of the Platform Sutra, says that we are like this shimmering dance of particles. We are not fixed entities. Certainly none of you look the same way you did 20 years ago. Try and find one part of yourself as the same as it was 20 years ago. We as beings are no more solid than our passions. We're constantly shifting. And there is no anger or no lust or no denial that exists like a lead box in my belly. But rather, there's a constantly shifting sense of feelings and emotions, reactions that arise and fall away. Energies that can, when they're arising, be transformed. If you wake up. It's the same with fear, with addiction, with grasping, our ignorance. If we wake up, there's a great quote by this Musō Soseki. He was a medieval Japanese monk. He said, attaining enlightenment doesn't mean beatification and radiating an aura of light. It is like a drunken man coming to his senses. A drunken man coming to his senses. You know, we do become so drunk with this explosion of feeling that arises, a passion. Drunk with fear, drunk with addiction, drunk with anger. Can we come to our senses? He says, when confusion and delusion suddenly stop and you meet the fundamental directly, this is called seeing essence and realizing enlightenment. And this is the transformation that Weining is pointing to when he says the very passions are enlightenment is also like this. There was Cha-Ching listening to this sermon, and for whatever reason, he probably heard the same words for the previous 25 years, but something happened to him in that group when he was there. Something happened, and there was a shift in his understanding. When he was transformed from spying to realizing, in the same way, at every moment we have an opportunity to be transformed from being a victim of our passions to inhabiting them, being aware of them, and guiding them. All of them are the basis of our skillful and compassionate and wise actions. And what's transformed is like this drunken man who comes to his senses. We become aware of what's actually going on. That's what we practice on the cushion. That's what it's all about. All the complaining about your meditation and everything. That's all that it's about. It's for you to train your mind to see what's arising. For some of us, it takes a little longer than others. It takes me a long time. Oh, I'm acting out of this old fear I have. Oh, and then the situation dissolves and becomes something else. You know, anger converts to a really vibrant, strong energy when it's not attacking others. It's forceful, discerning wisdom. It's the wisdom that's willing to stick to it and solve a problem. So we don't want to kill our anger. We want to guide it. You know, we have a class that meets once a month called The Path of the Ox, and the image that we use is that the ox is this mind, this Buddha nature, potentially Buddha nature self, that at the beginning needs some guidance. And the little person who is guiding it is carrying a lasso to pull it in one direction and a little whip to guide this ox. So yeah, we do need some discipline around this. I don't mean to give you the impression that you simply are going to, every time the moon comes out from behind a cloud, you're going to see it. But there is the potential. You know, that grasping, lustful quality, it's the heart of compassion. If you can see how it changes, how it turns into loving compassion. Oddly enough, that lustful, grasping quality, when it turns, when it transforms, becomes incredibly generous. It just wants to give and to give and to give. Because there's no self and other there. So to give is to receive. It's just a wonderful opening quality, what originally looks like a selfish grasping quality. And ignorance, stupidity, denial, converts into a really brilliant open-mindedness. Sees that there are many possibilities, that one doesn't have to be attached to only one outcome, one way of seeing a situation, but opens the mind freshly. We become curious about everything that happens. Rather than angry or pushing it away or saying, denying it and saying, oh, it's not there, I say, curious, what is this? What is this that's arising right now? So these transformations come and go. You know, the writings and the literature and the mythology of enlightenment, it's always happening at one moment and that's it. But actually, it's happening all the time if we just take a look at our lives. If we wake up like a drunken man to his senses, wake up to what's really arising in our hearts and minds. And it's the same with the idea of sudden and gradual that we find in the Platform Sutra. There is no sudden teaching and gradual teaching. There's merely a sudden awareness. That's the suddenness. Oh! And the gradualness is our everyday practice, our straightforward mind. Where we try to bring this practice into every aspect of our lives. Everything we do. It's not something we do here. We go downstairs, shove somebody out of the elevator, you know. We might even be willing to wait for them to get there before we press the button. It's a marvelous feeling when the chains fall away. And the fear dissolves in a sense of generosity and kindness permeates your being. You feel fresh and free, like this time of year. Fresh and free. And alive. Let me end with a little gatha to encourage you. because I so much want you to see this. Dark clouds hover over the Hudson. The waves are choppy and the wind cold. Suddenly the sun slants through the clouds. The waves glisten. The air warms. And moment to moment, we realize our lives. Thank you.